Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we'll be reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 8, Text 19, 20, and 21. Because 19 has a very small purport, 20 has no purport, 21 also has a small purport. Sa itam udviksha tad abjanala. Please chant. Oh, it's not on there. Okay. Nadi bir antar jalam avishesha. Narvagatas tad karanala nala. Nabin bichin vams tad avidatajaha. Sa itam udviksha tad abjanala. Nadi bir antar jalam avishesha. Narvagatas tat karanala nala. Na bim bichin vams tad avit dajaha. Se itam udviksha tad abjanala. I guess we did that one already. Okay, next verse. Text 20. I'll just do this one by myself because it has no purport, and then we can chant 21 together. Tamasya pare viruratma sargam vichinvato bhut samaham strinimihi yo deha bhajam vayam irayana parikshano tyaror ajasya hetihi. Translation of Vidura. While searching in that way about his existence, Brahma reached his ultimate time, which is the eternal will in the hand of Vishnu, and which generates fear in the mind of the living entity like the fear of death. Text 21. Okay, we'll chant this together. Tato nivrito pratilabdha kama swadishnyam asadya punasadevaha shanirjita shwasa nivritti chito nyashidad aruda Samadhi Yogaha. Tato nivrito pratilabdha kama. Swadishnam asadya punasadevaha. Shinirjita shwasa nivritti chito. Nashi dat aruda samadhi yogaha. Please chant. Lots of cheese, please. Synonyms: tata, thereafter, nivritta, retired from that endeavor, apratilabdhakamaha, without achievement of the desired destination, swadishnyam, own seat, asadya, reaching. Punaha, again. Saha, he. Devaha, the demigod. Shanai, without delay. Jita Shvasa, controlling the breathing. Nivritta, retired. Chittaha, intelligence. Nashidat, sat down. Aruda, in confidence. Samadhi yoga, in meditation on the Lord. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thereafter, being unable to achieve the desired destination, he retired from such searching and came back again to the top of the lotus. Thus, controlling all objectives, he concentrated his mind on the Supreme Lord. Purport. Samadhi involves concentrating the mind upon the supreme cause of all, even if one is unaware of whether his actual nature is personal, impersonal, or localized. Concentration of the mind on the supreme is certainly a form of devotional service. To cease from personal sense endeavors and to concentrate on the supreme cause is a sign of self-surrender. And when self-surrender is present, that is a sure sign of devotional service. Each and every living entity needs to engage in devotional service to the Lord if he wishes to understand the ultimate cause of his existence. Om Gyana Timindasya Gyananjana Shalakoya Chakshu Unmilita Mina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkest ignorance. My spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. So, translation again for text 20 and 21. O Vidura, while searching in that way about his existence, Brahma reached his ultimate time, which is the eternal will in the hand of Vishnu, and which generates fear in the mind of the living entity like the fear of death. Thereafter, being unable to achieve the desired destination, he retired from such searching and came back again to the top of the lotus. Thus, controlling all objectives, he concentrated his mind on the Supreme Lord. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada mentions in many of his purports, we hear that the prime prime dharma of this age is kirtanam. Shravanam kirtanam vishnu smaranam parasevanam archanam vandanam dasyam sakyam atnam nivedanam. Different processes of bhakti yoga, the primary two are shravanam kirtanam. It doesn't necessarily mean only chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. Of course, it's a very powerful form of kirtanam, but also hearing the Lord's words in the form of Bhagavad Gita, and also hearing about the Lord through the mouths of his pure devotees, such as Shukadeva Goswami, Srila Prabhupada, and our predecessor Acharyas, is also kirtan. So our whole process of bhakti yoga is actually kirtan. Harinam, 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 eva kevalam, kalo nastiva, 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 yugatya, nyata. Krishna, his name, his form, his pastimes, his words, his message, they're all non-different. So that verse, harinam, 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 eva kevalam, also means hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. And at the first canto, one of the purports, Srila Prabhupada mentions how in this age of Kali, the only means of deliverance is hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. That's in one of the purports. So we sometimes are reading these parts of the Bhagavatam, and a question may come up to our mind. Parikshit Maharaj only had 7 more days to live. Why does he have to understand all the gory details of the creation and destruction and details of the material world? Actually, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he actually says that he's offering his good counsel to the interested Vaishnavas. And he says that they should not be interested in hearing only about the Lord's activities like the Rasa Leela, but must be keenly interested in his pastimes, in his features of the Purusha avatars, in connection with Srishti Tattva or creational functions. Following the examples of Maharaj Parikshit, the ideal disciple, and Shukadeva Goswami, the ideal spiritual master. In another purport, Prabhupada mentions how the pure Vaishnavas, they're not picky. They don't only want to hear about Krishna's pastimes and, you know, in Goloka Vrindavan necessarily, but they're interested in hearing about anything connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we see this in the very example of Srila Prabhupada. Many times he would tell his disciples that, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam is like a sweet ball. Anywhere you bite is sweet. So on quite a few occasions, Prabhupada would ask Shruti Kirti Prabhu to read a book. And Shruti Kirti Prabhu would ask, what book? And Prabhupada said, it doesn't matter, any book. Okay, what part of the book? It doesn't matter. You just open it up anywhere and start reading. It's all nectarian. So when we dive into the pages of the Bhagavatam and without any pretension, without any bias, because it's pure knowledge coming from the Supreme Lord, that this actually nourishes the heart, purifies our consciousness, cheto darpanam marjanam bhava maha devagmi nirvarpanam. It cleanses the dust of the mirror of the mind. If there's a mirror and it's dusty and you look at it, you're not going to see your own reflection. But if you clean the dust to the degree that that mirror is clean, you'll see yourself clearly in the mirror. So similarly, our consciousness is polluted since time immemorial upon coming down to this material world. We're conditioned by our false ego, intelligence, mind, modes of material nature. But when we hear the Bhagavatam, we hear the holy names, we hear the words of the pure devotee, this cleanses the dust of the mirror of the mind, and we're able to see ourselves, and we're able to see reality for what it really is. It's compared to when it's dark outside, and there's, upon the sun rising early in the morning, there's a glimmer of light. So if there's a glimmer of light, but it's still mostly dark, you can kind of see the outside world. But to the degree that the sun has risen, to that degree, you can actually see the world more clearly. So in the same way, when the Srimad Bhagavatam arises in our heart by practice and purification, to that degree, we're able to see ourselves, the Supreme Lord, and reality for what it is. The Srimad Bhagavatam is as brilliant as the sun, and it has arisen upon Lord Krishna's departure for the spiritual world, accompanied by knowledge and religion. And those who have lost their vision in this dense darkness of this age of Kali shall gain light from this Purana. So when we hear these verses, we should just relish them. We should try to understand them. We should dissect them. And Srila Prabhupada, he oftentimes makes this point, and this correlates with the verses that we're reading today, how the Lord cannot be understood by our direct perception, by our... Okay, let me rephrase that. He could be understood by our direct perception if he reveals himself to us, but it's not by our own endeavor that we can understand or see or realize the Supreme Absolute Truth. Bhaktimam abhijanati yavanyashtasmi tatvataha tatomam tatvato gyatva vishate taranantaram. It is only by devotional service that one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And one time, I was distributing books. I met some gentleman, middle-aged man, and I gave him a book, and he was a little bit skeptical, but at least he was open-minded enough to receive the book. And then he was asking me, am I gonna understand this book? Is it too difficult? And I told him, well, you should chant this mantra. And I showed him the Ma mantra. I said, this will give you qualification to understand the book more. And he thought that was like a silly concept. He said, you mean I have to say these words to understand this book? You know, he thought it was a kind of a goofy thing. But factually, yeah. You have to engage in devotional service to understand Krishna. Of course, reading the book itself is devotional service, but the more devotional service we perform, we gain qualification to understand the Srimad Bhagavatam more and more. And Lord Brahma says this in the 10th canto, Itam Satam Brahma Sukhana Bhutam. And the last line he says, I forget the word, krita punya punjaha, that by devotional service, you're actually adding to your transcendental bank account. It's like if you're putting in a penny every day or a dollar every day, eventually you're going to become a millionaire if you just keep doing that. So in the same way, the more hearing and chanting we perform, we gain qualification to enter into the mysteries of understanding. And so we see this. This is happening. This is what's going on in the Srimad Bhagavatam right now. Lord Brahma doesn't know who he is, what he is, where he's from, what existence is. He's just somehow just appeared. He doesn't know what's going on. So he's trying to figure out these questions. So he uses his own intelligence, his own endeavor. He is born on top of a lotus, self-manifest from Krishna, and he climbs down the stem. He's trying to figure out what is this all about. He's the only person in sight, and he comes to the realization that he can't figure it out. So he goes back to the top of the lotus, and he starts meditating, or he hears the word tapa, and he understands what this means. He has to perform tapasya. He has to perform meditation. So in this sense, he was initiated into the devotional service of the Lord. This was his service. Krishna at this point wanted him to perform meditation to realize the meaning of his existence. He did this for 311 trillion years. He actually meditated. And from this, Krishna actually appeared and shook his hand. Okay, I'm mixing things up. Krishna appeared, told him what his duty is, which is to create the universe. And at this point, Brahma was enlightened from within the heart to perform his duty of creating the universe. And at this point, Krishna shook his hand and was very happy with his willingness to perform this service. So we are actually... We come into this world not knowing anything. So in one sense, we are in the same position as Lord Brahma. In one sense. We're born as babies and were conditioned by the external energy, external surroundings. But it comes a point in the jiva sojourn in the material world that if he's fortunate, if he's intelligent, he starts to question, who am I? What is this world all about? Where did existence come from? And through perhaps many lifetimes of personal endeavor, he comes to the point of understanding that he can't do it on his own. Krishna actually says this in Bhagavad Gita also, Bahunam janmanam ante gyanavam maham prapadite vasudevam sarvamiti samahama sudurlabaha. After many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing Vasudev to be the Supreme Lord of all that be. So it may take many births and deaths, but the jiva will eventually come to the point of understanding he's helpless, he doesn't know who he is, and he can't do it on his own. So he starts to look for a higher power. And this may come in different ways. He may start off with an impersonal understanding. He may start off with so many different types of religions and become disillusioned. But it comes to the point where the jiva has to understand that Vasudev is the Supreme Lord of all that be. So in one purport, Prabhupada also mentions that the neophyte devotee, instead of just jumping to the 10th canto, he should read systematically about Krishna's creation and Krishna's different energies. And what this does, it creates a sound foundation that solidifies in our intelligence that Krishna is not an ordinary person. He is actually the Supreme Lord and everything emanates from him. Because if you jump to the 10th canto without understanding this, without having this foundation, there is the possibility of getting in trouble and becoming a sahajya or taking Krishna as an ordinary person. And you take his pastimes as just some myth or some historical event and not understanding the relevance of the pastime and understanding that we are supposed to be there. And there's a chance for us to also participate with the Supreme Lord in his pastimes. So this is talking about Krishna's external energy. Lord Brahma created the external energy. And after so many millions of years, actually after 1,000 Divya Yugas, Divya Yugas means four Yugas combined, Satya Yuga, Treta, Dwarpa, Kali. After 1,000 of those cycles, there's a partial devastation where half the universe is annihilated. But the upper planets, the upper planetary systems, such as like Brahma Loka, they don't become annihilated. Lord Brahma still lives. At this time, the living entities merge into the body of, correct me if I'm mistaken, they merge into the body of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and that's considered Lord Brahma's night. He takes rest or does whatever he does at night. And then upon his day, he creates the universe again, or whatever part of the universe was annihilated. The jivas come back out of the body of Vishnu and continue with their karma, their karmic activities in various planets. And after 100 years of Lord Brahma's life, there's a total devastation where even Lord Brahma himself leaves his body. Lord Brahma is a post. It's not his name. Just like we have the president of America, that's not his name. He has his own name, Trump or Biden or whatever. But the president is a post. So in the same way, Lord Brahma is a post where different jivas can take birth in that body of Lord Brahma. And there's a Lord Brahma in every universe. The understanding is that Karna Dakshaya Vishnu, he's laying on the causal ocean. So let me explain what that means. There's all of existence, which consists of basically infinity, and 3/4 of that existence is the spiritual realm. We have the Brahman effulgence, that actually is the effulgence emanating from Krishna's transcendental body. We have the supreme planet, Goloka Vrindavan, and we have various spiritual planets, Vaikuntha planets. That's Tri Tripad Vibhuti. Tri means three. It's kind of interesting because, like, even in America, we have like a stand that you can put a phone on. It's called a tripod. It's actually Sanskrit. It's three. It has three legs. Anyways, and then part of that existence, there's a dark cloud, and that's the material world, Ekapad Vibhuti, the one-fourth of existence. And within that material world, there's one huge form of Vishnu that lies on something called the causal ocean. And Lord Vishnu, when he exhales, he breathes out basically unlimited material universes. There is a limit, there is a number, but it's so high that we can't conceive. And within every universe, Lord Brahma, there's a Lord Brahma in every universe. And the function of Lord Brahma, he's like the engineer of the universe. He creates the different material energy, different material planets. He's the main Prajapati. Basically, everybody, every jiva is born out of him. So actually, all of us are one big family. Because if you go back in our genealogical chart, if you just continue to go back millions and millions of years, we all somehow come from Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma is the great grandfather of the universe. So one may question, why do we believe all this? This sounds pretty far out. Why do we accept this knowledge? So let's just think about what are our other options if we don't accept this. Our other options are maybe another religion, perhaps. Another option is the atheistic understanding of this material world. And the atheistic understanding of this material world, I was taught in school that you get two options to believe in. And I don't remember at least one of them, but the main one was the Big Bang Theory, and they had another option. And the teacher gave us a choice to believe in either one. So let's just take the Big Bang Theory, for example. I don't know all the details, but somehow nothing spontaneously combusted, and everything was put into place exactly perfectly, gravitational pull, and the theory of evolution came out of nothing and nowhere. Nobody was in control of that. So if you actually dissect their philosophy, it is also really far out. You may say that our philosophy is amazing and why should we believe that? But also, and if you take any other option, it's also really amazing and why should you believe in that? So the reason I personally take this theory or this understanding as my understanding of reality is because it's something that you can confirm through practice. We may not be able to see Lord Brahma and see Karna Dakshay Vishnu manifest all the universes, but at least we can experience Krishna. We can experience Krishna to some degree. We can have union with the Supreme Lord on a daily basis. It's very tangible. If you follow the process of devotional service in the way that it was given to us, if you just follow the process, you can have tangible results. And Prabhupada actually explains this in a class that we heard yesterday. And I'm going to read what he said. He said, so Krishna is teaching. Krishna is so kind. He's personally teaching that perform this yajna. He's personally chanting, dancing, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The picture is in front of us. Personally, he's teaching us, perform this yajna, you rascal, and you'll get everything. You will get everything. Now, where is the proof? The proof is this Krishna consciousness movement. We are simply chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and spending crores of rupees. Simply, what are we doing? We are not doing any business. We have not many professional men, but why are we getting so much money? We are spending 8 lakhs of rupees per month, and we have got food, we have got milk. We are rather feeding others also, bringing food. So why don't you see practically how these Krishna conscious people, they know that we are fabulously rich. This question was raised in Parliament also. So how we became fabulously rich? We do not do anything. I have not taught you anything magic. I simply request you, Chant Hare Krishna mantra 16 times, please. But you, we are not following that. This is the only remedy. Yajna Sankirtanam Prayer Yajanti Hi Sumedha Saha. So if you deny the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the existence of God, then you have to explain to us, how is it that thousands of devotees around the world were saying the same words every single day for a couple hours? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Most devotees I meet aren't completely crazy fanatic people. They're level-headed, they're intelligent. You know, they think about things. So it's not that we're just giving into some dogma fanatically and mindlessly chanting, and it's some the effect where you take a pill, but it's actually not the medicine. But yeah, it's not some like placebo effect that, okay, the book said that if you chant Hare Krishna, you'll feel some ecstasy, therefore I'm chanting. But how is it that people are able to do this day after day after day after day, year after year, and experience something metaphysical, something that's otherworldly? How are we getting pleasure from doing this? How is it that when we go out on book distribution, first of all, how is it that people are even buying the books? That's like, to me, is sometimes I'm like bewildered by that. How is it people are taking stacks of books and giving huge donations? I don't see anybody else doing that. I don't see encyclopedia salesmen selling whole encyclopedias at schools. This is something that's unheard of anywhere else. And how is it that we're feeling bliss and happiness just from distributing books? I'm not keeping any money for myself. I don't live a luxurious life. From the material perspective, happiness means enjoying sense gratification, having a big house, having a nice wife, having a nice sex life, having a lot of money, having a nice car. If that's what happiness means, we don't have any of those things, and we're simply selling books, and we're feeling happiness and feeling satisfied. So much happiness that I don't want to do anything else. Even if you offered me a Lamborghini and 10 wives and $1 billion, I would not accept that. I might accept $1 billion just so I can distribute more books, but I wouldn't keep even a penny for myself. So how is that? If you were to deny the existence of God, you would have to explain, how is that possible? Materially speaking, you can't. It's bewildering. So hearing things like this in the Srimad Bhagavatam, maybe we're not able to confirm it through our sense perception. Perhaps we are, if, like I said, if Krishna reveals that to us, but Krishna may not reveal to us. We may not see Narada Muni flying in the sky. We may not see Mount Meru, etc. But at least the basics, we can experience Krishna in one form or another. And actually, Srila Prabhupada asked his disciples this one time, that if someone asked you, what is the proof that the Supreme Personality of Godhead exists? And I think it was Guru Das, but I might be mistaken. But someone answered, oh, it's because the Bhagavad Gita says it. And he said, no. They'll just say, this is just some book, you know, they won't believe you. And then another person said, well, it's because you say it, Prabhupada. He said, I'm just some old man, you know, why would they believe me? And then someone answered, because when we chant Hare Krishna, we can feel Krishna's presence. And Prabhupada said, yes, this is the point. It's a tangible thing. You can experience Krishna on a day-to-day basis. So we have to preserve this knowledge, and we have to preserve this bhakti tradition, and not be intimidated by other theories or atheistic speculations, even though basically they're running the planet. And we see that in the battle of Kurukshetra, the Pandavas were outnumbered tremendously. Just like materially speaking, they should have been conquered. They had warriors such as Bhishma Dev, they had Karna, they had Dronacharya, amazing warriors. Of course, the Pandavas had amazing warriors also. But the main thing that the Pandavas had was Krishna. And because Krishna was on their side, they won the war. So in the same way, we may seem like a small movement. There's only a few of us, handful of us. And even from that handful, even a smaller handful of us are actually on the front line trying to give Krishna consciousness to others, bring people in. It's a very small minority. And look what we're going up against. UCLA, USC, Purdue, Stanford, so many prestigious, rich universities. Think of all the technology that the scientists are creating. it's very impressive. Indeed, they're very intelligent people. But the intelligence is misdirected. And Prabhupada actually explains this in a purport in the second canto, that the devotees, we have nothing to do with politics in the sense that we don't need any political position, because there's so much scandals and diplomacy. It's a big entanglement. But we are supposed to be the Brahmins, the Brahmanas of society, and the Brahmanas are supposed to be leading the government. So if the leaders of this world were to accept the Vaishnavas as directors, as advisors, then we can actually change the world. And Prabhupada gave this a formula, a simple formula, how we can actually inject Krishna consciousness in the masses. He emphasized book distribution, mass book distribution. We need more devotees going out, distributing more and more books. Mass Harinam, Sankirtan, something that's unfortunately neglected for the most part. Farm communities, where we actually show by example what are in the books, and we show by practical example how we can live a peaceful life. And scientific preaching, which unfortunately has not been very successful either. So we have a lot of work to do in the Hare Krishna movement. And Bhakti Tirtha Swami, he was mentioning of one thing in a class when the big Panchatattva deities were installed in Mayapur. During a Bhagavatam class, he made everybody make a promise. And he made everyone raise their hand. He said, "If you can you please make a promise with me? Is anybody willing?" And a lot of people raised their hand. And he said, "Prabhupada's mercy is huge. And this is the manifestation of Panchatattva in the Mayapur temple." He explained how Lord Chaitanya is raising his arms like this. He is giving the mercy out to the conditioned souls. Lord Nityananda is on his left side. Gadadhar Panda is on his right side as protectors. They're protecting the cult of bhakti, where Lord Chaitanya can actually share the love of God freely. And Srivas and Advaita Acharya are there and receiving people, receiving jiva souls come in. And he said, this is a manifestation of Prabhupada's mercy. Prabhupada's mercy is huge. And this whole world is actually meant to deliver the conditioned souls. That's why this material world exists. It's actually a reformatory place. It's like a prison. The original understanding of a prison is not just to punish people just for punishment, but it's actually to reform your character. So when you go back out into the real world, you're a better man. You're not going to perform those activities anymore. So that's the point of this material world. So Lord Chaitanya's mercy is huge. Srila Prabhupada's mercy is huge. So he made everyone make this promise, that whatever it takes for us to be a pure recipient, a pure via medium of Prabhupada's mercy, let that happen. Whether that means we die, whether that means our spouse leaves us, whatever happens, materially speaking, let that happen to me. If that's going to help me become a better devotee and a better via medium for Prabhupada's mercy to flow through. So this whole process of creation that we're hearing, Lord Brahma created this structure of the universe for that specific purpose, to reclaim the conditioned souls. And Lord Chaitanya is very pleased when one of his devotees goes out on a limb and tries to spread the Hare Krishna movement. And we see that his most dear devotee, that he actually said his body belonged to, Lord Chaitanya said, my body belongs to this person, was Vasudev Dutt. And why was this? Vasudev Dutt was actually willing to take all the sinful reactions of every conditioned soul in the universe upon himself and suffer in hell eternally if all the souls in this universe can go back home, back to Godhead. He was actually serious when he said that. Now think about this. All the cockroaches, all the microscopic germs, all the lizards, every jiva in the universe, have their sins upon me so I can suffer in hell eternally. Let them go back to Godhead. And Lord Chaitanya was so pleased by this sentiment that actually Lord Chaitanya didn't let Vasudev Dutt suffer, but every jiva in the universe actually went back to Godhead at that point. It says that in Mandya Lila, Chaitanya Charitamrita in the purport. The whole universe was delivered. So Vasudev Dat is actually an incarnation of Prahlad Maharaj. And Prabhupada said that we are to follow in the line of Prahlad Maharaj and bring every soul back home, back to Godhead. This is done by distributing our literature. That was one quote. But like I said, there's other forms that he emphasized a lot. So that's all I could think of here. If anybody has any questions, corrections, chastisements, or comments. Yes, Rabindranath Prabhu.
You mentioned how the spiritual world is three-fourths of the creation, and it's infinite. So how would you understand that, a three-fourths of infinity? If there's a way to even do that, I don't know.
Yeah, okay, this is my understanding, that those numbers are there just to give our conditioned mind a reference to work with. You know, because infinity, we can't conceive that with our conditioned mind. Because we're used to everything having limitations. So if you say infinity, can't really conceive that. But the idea is that a big part of infinite existence is the material world. And at least I've read that in Prabhupada's books, Ekapad Vibhuti and Tripad Vibhuti. I'm not really sure if that satisfies your answer or your question. Sorry.
Hare Krishna, Ananda Kirtan Prabhu, thank you for your wonderful class. So, you were mentioning how Lord Brahma was assigned by Krishna to create the universe, and there's many different Brahmas creating different universes. So, I was hearing Prabhupada's very short lecture yesterday, and he was talking about Durga Devi, and how Durga, Prabhupada said that she creates universes. So, what is the function of Durga in terms of creation, and how that relates to Lord Brahma?
Okay. I have to admit, I'm not an expert on this subject. So, I can do some research and find the details for you. But my understanding, which is just from what I'm reading and I'm trying to remember, is Durga Devi is the goddess of the external. She's in control of the external energy. So in that sense, everything that is taking part in the material universes or the material, the Mahatattva, is actually filtered through her because she's in charge of everything. But Lord Brahma is more like an engineer. He's, you know, it's like you if you hire some construction worker to come work on your house. You know, you may buy all the materials. All the material belongs to you, but the person is constructing the house. So my understanding is the same way. Durga Shakti or Mahamaya is actually her realm, but it's Lord Brahma that actually constructs the universe in such a way where he makes the different planetary systems and the different forms of the living entities, etc. That's my understanding. If that's okay. Yes, Maharaj.
Thank you for a very, very, not just wonderful class, but it dealt with so many different facets of our philosophy. How you can get them all into one class is actually an amazing thing in itself. But it is. All of the different points. Can we have no talking there? Thank you. So, what I just wanted to comment upon is us. Sometimes we get a little frustrated, we get disappointed, we get upset because not seeing the whole world becoming Krishna conscious. And after all, this movement has been going on for what about how many years? 60, 70 years?
56 years.
I mean, in the Western world and even in the Eastern world, it's been spreading here and there in so many places. And so we get frustrated and saying, well, why aren't more people turning to Krishna consciousness? And this is a false mentality. We cannot determine, we cannot decide on when the whole world will become Krishna conscious. And it may take many, many years. The most important thing that each devotee should really deal with is that his own relationship with the different persons whom Krishna is sending to him to become clean and clear, pure and transcendental. In other words, we have to understand that progress comes when we become very patient. And that patience can come by the fact that sometimes you may talk to a person, I've talked to a person. It took me 5 years before the person actually became a devotee. But my position was, if it takes 500 years or 5 million years, so be it. The most important is not like going to school. You do 4 years and you get your diploma. That's the what I call a material diploma mentality. We have to get out of that. The real thing is that Krishna is giving me some mercy. He's giving me guidance. He's giving me direction. He's giving me help so that I can transform or change or this particular individual with whom I'm talking. And if Krishna wants to ultimately allow that, great. And if he wants to hold it back for some time, that's his business. That's also great. Our only business in order to be able to be fulfilling to the Supreme Lord is to simply do the service, try our best, and to think, look what I was like before I became a higher devotee. That doesn't mean I'm a perfect devotee. But look where I was, and look where I am now. Similarly, the whole world can go on that same level, but we need to have that patience, that devotion, that dedication. And if we have that, fine. But that is not our goal. Our goal is to take each person whom Krishna sends to us and do our very best to transform him or her to become a devotee, a better devotee, a higher devotee, a greater devotee, so that and when we see the change in that person's life, that should give us hope that yes, so much more can be done. And we should not feel that it all has to be done in one fell swoop. It may take millions of years. But if that's what it takes, if that's what Krishna is giving it, so be it. Our business, as I said, is what do we have before us? Who are we dealing with now? How can I take this person who is so fallen, so wretched, so he feels that he can do anything he wants, and to show him that is the result, that's the cause of his misery, his difficulties, his problems, his things like that. So this is the important point. Let us all be patient. Let us all be persevering. Let us all be understanding. Let us all be good enough to realize where we once were and where we are today, and everyone whom we deal with will also make changes, but at the behest of his own or the effort of his own that he makes in order to improve, and the grace that Krishna gives him to make that improvement. And if we actually understand what grace is, it's getting a gift that you don't deserve. And Krishna is very much like that. He gives us gifts that we don't deserve. And if we have that mentality, then we can only be happy, no matter how bad things may look. That things are really never bad when you're Krishna conscious. They're bad when you're material conscious. That's all. Hare Krishna.
Krantaraj, Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.